And continuing, chapter 6, text. Text 33. Thus, having passed the third part of a man's natural term of life in the forest, he may live as an ascetic during the fourth part of his existence, after abandoning all attachment to worldly objects. He who, after passing from order to order, after offering sacrifices and subduing his senses, becomes tired with giving alms and offering of food, an ascetic gains bliss after death. Here is that that one gets tired with the concept that of fruit of work, what he thinks he'll get from that. He's giving in charity, he's doing all these things, but for the purpose of the benefits that one will accrue from that. And so when one comes to the point where when one has those duties to perform, it's simply duty, what Krishna talks about in the Gita, then that on that platform, nishkam karma, then one can move into the last order of life. But otherwise, if one is feeling that there's some benefits personally to gain, and that in the way of results, then that's not so good. Then one should not take sannyas. Then one should remain in the vanaprastha ashram for those things to gradually go from the heart. So therefore it says tired of giving alms, because he's doing that. But it should be that it comes to the point where one is not looking for what will be the return, like that. Because when we look for what will be the return for ourselves, then that will be, how you say? Then some mode of passion is there. So it's expected that that mode will be burnt up. It means in the grihastha life, it's been basically, by performance there, it's been eradicated. But something will be left. So the vanaprastha ashram, that's the time when that is, then, I say, in a thoughtful, systematic way, then it's taken care of by study, by practice, and all these things, and that is taken care of. 35. When he has paid the three debts, let him apply his mind to the attainment of final liberation. He who seeks it without having paid his debts sinks downward. So in the Vedic system, where there is not, in those aspects of the system that are not God-conscious, then one has to, he has debts to the forefathers, he has debts to the, to the demigods and to the sages, to the parents, like this. So unless those debts are paid by what's having here, the next verse, having studied the Vedas in accordance with the rule, having begot sons according to the sacred law, and having offered sacrifices according to his ability, he may direct his mind to the attainment of final liberation. So then, the brahmachari, then all these things of like when you sweep, then the reaction of killing so many living entities in that does not apply, neither to the sannyas. But the grihastha, then they apply, because the general idea is that the grihastha is, in control of their activities. The brahmachari is under someone else's direction. The sannyasi is not supposed to be involved in all these activities. It means sweeping and all that, but it's not in any way like his own house, his own belongings. They all belong to the Lord. So then the grihastha then consciously takes responsibility for the activities. That's one of the major aspects of grihastha ashram, is that one is taking that responsibility for the family, for oneself, for one's duties like this. So then when one steps into that situation, then along with it comes these others. Then we have duties to the Vedas, we have duties to the forefathers, we have duties like this. So then these are the systems that are practiced by the followers of the Vedic culture. So they have to study the Veda, and then that's the debt to the sages. They have to beget sons, because that will carry on the Shraddhas and all that, so that's their debt to the forefathers. And they have to offer sacrifices according to their ability, then that is what they owe to the demigods, because they give all the facilities and all that, so one performs sacrifice and then they are pleased. So for the devotees, then this is all done by the proper chanting of the holy name, by chanting by engaging in the Sankirtan mission, then these activities then are, I mean, these debts are already being paid. So to that degree that we surrender to the chanting process, to that degree that we absorb ourselves in that process, then these debts are cleared, and the heart is also becoming purified. In other words, there must be, there's reason for doing the activities. It's just like for the grihastha, it's very natural to have children. So now, if they're just having children, it's just their own desire, then it may bring about some selfishness. But if it's seen that this is also part of it, this is what is part of the duty to the forefathers, part of the duty to the community, then it takes on a different flavor. Because it says, having begot sons according to the sacred law. So that means following the different duties that are there in the sacred law, means according to the proper conception of children, proper raising of the children, then those aspects are, it's understood, it's natural. So then you give direction on how that can be done, and then one is satisfied in doing it. Right? Otherwise, one may feel, well, maybe I shouldn't have children. But then the Vedic rule is there, is that you would naturally have children. And then by doing that, then, what did I say? You engage that desire in the Lord's service, and you have a way to practice that desire. Does this make some sense? It's a subtlety. It means if one is thinking on my own, I would like to have children, then one may feel selfish. But one understands that this is the tradition, and there's rules for this, then one can feel very comfortable going about doing that, fulfilling the desires. In other words, dealing with the senses, like it mentions in the Gita, offering the senses into the sense objects. So that becomes a sacrifice, and then one can feel satisfied that he's doing it. Becomes duty now rather than just one's own desire, like that. You know, just like we like to take prasadam, we want to eat. But now if there's a rule, one must honor prasadam, then one doesn't feel that I'm being selfish and eating and all these kind of things. I'm taking care of myself, but it's my duty, I must honor prasad. So then naturally as this goes, then this, one feels comfortable, you know, eating, you know, however many times a day, you know, 3 times a day, 10 times a day, like this. And as one matures, then that starts to slowly come down. You're honoring prasad, you know, then 3 times, then 2 times, then 1 time, you know, and then like Raghunath Das every other day, you know, or like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, something came, you know, he just accepts it, like that. So then it has that whole broad scope. For when Sakam is very prominent, up to the Nishkam, and up to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, Prema platform. So by having the rules, Krishna is very expert. He's placed the rules in the right places, so that one can feel very comfortable doing those duties. So here then, for the devotee, the debt has actually been paid by the proper chanting of the holy name, but if one is following emotional needs, then one naturally follows the culture that goes along with that. So even though it becomes secondary. So this becomes very important for someone who's following the Vedic culture but is not Krishna conscious. Like that. Means they can't, they'll have difficulty, it says here, if they haven't paid the debt, they'll sink downwards. So if their idea is liberation, they're not going to get there. You know, they can't, because they haven't done this first. So it's part of their major path. But for the devotee, it's not. Their chanting of the holy name, that is the major path. These become more along the line of just etiquette and culture. Like that aspect, it becomes more prominent. That one finds that these desires are there, so therefore engage them in the Lord's service. So they're secondary. They're not the main thing. So one will see that these things will be done. The devotees will still follow these rules. But their whole purpose and their emphasis is different. It's very different.
Now, with the performance of austerities, Sometimes the desire is for spiritual benefit, but you get material result. Does that mean there's some, you do get a material reaction?
Means,
does that mean that there's something wrong with the way you're performing your stroke?
No. It means every action gives a reaction. That's automatic. The point is why you're doing the action. If you're doing it to please Krishna, it's duty. That's the thing, is if one's doing it because it's one's duty. It means like the brahmachari, his duty is to study, to render menial service. So he's doing that because it's his duty. From that he gains knowledge, he gains fame, he gains, authority, he gains, so many things are gained. But that's not why it's being done. It's being done because this is what you're supposed to do. And then with those, then he can preach, or he'll be successful as Grihastha Ashram, or whatever situation he is able to situate himself in. Those will be useful. But then, now that he has those are still also used in the Lord's service. One doesn't use them otherwise. You know, like brahmacharya. If that's followed very nicely, especially from a young age, then they have great influence over people. When they speak, people will listen, just automatically. So now, they didn't do their activities to gain that, but then once they've gained that, they don't perform those, they're not interested in influencing people for themselves. They'll use that as a tool for Krishna consciousness. Like if you have some money, then you can do things with it. You know, and if you don't have money, you'll do your service in a different way. You'll find a way to do the service that doesn't require money. And if you do, then you can do so many things. Same way, is that they have these, then they use it. So like this, all the four varnas, all the ashrams, they have duties like that. And if we perform them, result will come automatically. You know, like Krishna says, if you don't work, how do you maintain yourself even? Like that. So you're performing your activity, but that result that's coming is for Krishna. That's the point. It's Krishna's result. And then if it comes, we use it. If it doesn't come, we don't use it. Or if it comes and it's not in our line to use it, then like the brahmachari, he gets money from his act. It means, artha will come from his performance of duty. For performing his dharma, the brahmachari gets artha. But then he doesn't keep the artha, he gives it to the teacher. Like that. The grihastha will keep the artha and then take care of themselves, and then what is extra, they will... It's interesting, it mentions extra means after they're giving in charity and they're taking care of the family members and doing all their duties, then extra above that, then they're giving away. So it means already planned within what they're getting, they're giving away. There's charity. But then sometimes there's above that left over. Either more came in or you didn't need in certain areas. So even that will be given away. So they accept it and then they give in charity, like that. Same with that's the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they'll all do that. The Grihastha will get and they'll use what they need and give the rest away. The Vanaprast generally doesn't perform those activities that generally give a lot. Means the brahmachari goes out begging, and depending upon the situation, they'll beg from three houses or from seven houses. They'll generally never beg from one, because the idea is that you shouldn't create the mentality you become dependent on one person. You know, because that makes one dependent, and then one also then feels he should get more from one person. If you're in the thing, you go to one, and then they give, but if someone else gives less, then you kind of are expecting why they don't give more. So one goes to three people, seven people, like that. And generally one will always get, plus you take it back to the ashram, that's turned in. And then that feeds everybody in the ashram, you know. You put everything together and then it... So what one's going is helping maintain so many else in the ashram. But the Vanaprastha, he generally will only collect just what they need, that's it. You know, Grihastha can collect more, but Vanaprastha generally will collect just what they need. It means if they need 100 grams of grain, they'll go out and pick up in the marketplace what falls on the ground, or from the fields what falls on the ground, or like that. They just only what they need, nothing extra. Like that. So it's much, much less. like that, or just accept what people give. And then if they give more than what they need, they'll take what they need, give the rest away, like that. So like that. So they're practicing that giving away, the austerity, and like that. So the grihastha gets and uses. Brahmacharya will give that. Sannyas also may get, but then that's also given for service. But that's pretty much everything is given away, like that, because everything one's doing is for service. So then that will be there. You don't have a family as part of your service, like that. So the grihastha has a family as part of the service and other things as service. So they have to divide it up there, while the sannyas won't have the family as service. So then everything can just go into whatever the preaching activity that one has. A twice-born man who seeks final liberation without having studied the Vedas, without having begotten sons, and without having offered sacrifices, sinks downwards. So here is, we see, is also this twilight words of final liberation. Because it says final liberation. Now for most, they'll take it, okay, one's liberated from so many material distresses, then the final liberation is going to the Brahman. But we know that that doesn't actually... You can't describe going to the Brahma Jyoti as final liberation, because nobody can stay there like that. You either have to, one will generally fall from there like that. Very rare cases you can go up from there. It means if you were if you qualified to be a big enough demon that Krishna himself personally killed you, then when you get agitated and the Brahman want to do activities, you might remember the Lord, because that was the last thing you ever did, was fight with the Lord. But now you're in a purified condition, so one will not think of the Lord unfavorably, generally. At least it'll be neutral. So one won't have the demoniac mentality. So one can think of the Lord and then go to Vaikuntha. But the acharyas don't recommend that one banks on that is a process. That one, otherwise one has to arrange one's life that one is the absolute biggest demon, that it's worth it, that the demigods can't take care, no one can take care, and only if Vishnu comes, then your problem can be removed. So it's not a recommended path. So therefore, and so in either case, no one can stay there eternally. So it can't be called final liberation. So here it means going back to Godhead, like this. But otherwise, is the performance of sacrifice that is there, performance of the chanting of the holy names, the Sankirtan mission, studying the scriptures. Without studying the scriptures, one doesn't actually know what you're doing. It means we have to become attracted to Krishna, so we have to know who Krishna is. And we have to become give up our attraction to the material world, but unless we know what the material world is, how we won't be able to do that. And then we have to be able to deal properly with other people, like that. So generally that would be, for us, means by preaching and this and that. So that means if one is able to train somebody, teach somebody, then they are like the student, like the child. So there's always the point that is made about being kind to other living entities, that compassion must be there as a essential point to go back to Godhead, is that then one must be detached from the material world, one must be kind to other living entities, and one must be attached to the Lord, like that. Just being attached to the Lord is not enough, because the Lord's not alone. So if one can't be kind or deal nicely with other people, the Lord is not too interested. Having performed the ishti sacred to the Lord of creatures, Prajapati, where he gives all his property as the sacrificial fee, having reposited the sacrificial fires in himself, a Brahmin may depart from his house as an ascetic. Okay. So in other words, when he's giving up everything, giving up the attachment to possessions, when that is done, then the mood of sacrifice is no longer a ritual for gaining material gain, but it becomes part of one's in other words, one takes on the mood of mission, the spirit of mission, that one has to spread the Sankirtan mission. And one gives up attachment to the to possessions that they belong to oneself. Then one may depart from the house, when one can dedicate oneself like that. 39. Worlds radiant in brilliancy become the portion of him who recites the text regarding Brahman and departs from his house as an ascetic after giving a promise of safety to all created beings. Okay, so here, these are also the points that are being, also these hidden points where we're touching more on the philosophy and the ultimate goal here. World's radiant brilliancy. So those are only, so for some, they may think this will be the heavenly planets or the karmi. The jnani, he will think, you know, the means, we talk about this is a world. The whole universe is a world, though it's a place. So then they will talk about it. The Brahman is a world, the world of Brahman. But here it's also in plural, worlds. So then here's the thing, is where, as we mentioned before, it's when the Brahmavadis hear just these words, they're satisfied, they don't think about them deeply. Because if they think about them deeply, then they may have to doubt their philosophy. So that's an area they don't touch on. So worlds means there's many. So radiant and brilliancy, those are only the spiritual worlds because they create. It means you have a world and it's radiant. The Brahman is just radiance. It itself is not radiant. So it's not creating brilliancy like that. So here it's talking about that the one who is always absorbed in the, how you say, is always discussing and reciting the transcendental literature, then the aspect of the spiritual realm, the spiritual planets, the activities on those planets, then they become part of that person, because that is their meditation. So they're able to enter onto that platform. They're able to situate themselves on this transcendental platform of transcendental activities. So that becomes their inspiration, is that they're always absorbed in the transcendental activities and transcendental. And then here it says, after giving a promise of safety to all beings. So is they're not going to engage any living entity for their own purpose. They're not going to engage anyone for their own desires. Either fruitive means the animals are sacrificed, or even just engaging someone for their own personal benefit. But they will simply train, speak in that, how people can engage themselves in the transcendental activities. That is their... So this way, then, this is safety, because real safety means in connection with Krishna consciousness, with transcendental. Otherwise, there's no real safety. Just so they're not going to kill anyone, okay, that's nice. But the real safety is when one comes in contact with spiritual subject matter. Because that, Krishna says, was a verse in the Gita, that, you know, once one has done any service, then one's saved from the greatest fear. So when one is fearful, means one doesn't know. Fear comes from not knowing what will happen, who one is, what will be the situation, what will be the result of an activity like that. That creates fear. So when one knows that one's activities are for Krishna, one is Krishna's, everything belongs to Krishna, then all this fear goes. Fear goes from the heart. Because then one knows, I'm Krishna's servant like this. So this is the real feeling of safety, is one can give that fearlessness to others. One can train them in the transcendental activities and subjects. So that's the actual safety. So this is the... what is meant here. Because we see in all these, that's what's important to understand, is that one has to approach the writings of the previous acharyas. So this is a writing of Lord Brahma. Then than through one's own acharya. So Srila Prabhupada is our acharya. So then we have to be able to approach this through that. Because otherwise the Brahmavadis will approach this through their acharya, Shankara, you know, or whatever school of thought that they're in, or the karmis through theirs. And then we will see. Worlds to them will mean either the world, for us it will mean the spiritual realm. For the Brahmavadis it'll mean Brahman. And for the karmis it will mean the heavenly planets. So we have to be able to see this safety, what that means. So for some that just means I do no activity, I just move around as mum, I don't deal with anything, I don't interact with anyone, I don't do anything. So then one has given up improper or how you say selfish on the gross platform. But one has not given up selfishness on the the subtler aspects, mainly the gross aspects of the subtle platform. But one hasn't given up the subtle aspects, you know, like the ego, because one is thinking, I am God. Like that. One may not bother anybody, but one still thinks he's God. So in that way, one is still expecting something from the people, some dealing, some respect, something this and that. So there's always something that they're getting. So for us, this safety will mean that one will try to help others understand who they are and their relationship with the Lord. Does that make some sense? So all these things can be read in all these different levels. Means this is the wonder, the glory of the Vedic culture. It fits everybody. A karmi can read this and be satisfied and inspired. And they will see the fruit of gain, and they will emphasize those verses. Like that as their goal, their process and goal. And the Brahmavadis, they will read the same scripture and they will follow the same activities, but for the getting to ultimate Brahman. And the devotee will read the same activities and see them as the culture of Krishna consciousness, because that's actually what it is. The Vedic culture actually only belongs to the devotees. But because the jnanis and the karmis accept the authority of the scriptures. And this way they accept the Lord's authority coming down to the scriptures, if they don't accept him personally. Then they are given an opportunity to take advantage of that. Does that make some sense? It means the culture is... What is happening is the culture coming from the spiritual world is giving to the living entities to get themselves out of the material world. That being in the material world and having practiced material activities as a non-devotee, one develops, any number of 8,400,000 types of desires. And then within that, then there's so many fine details. So then all those desires have to be burnt up. So then the culture is given that matches the philosophy that allows us to engage those activities in the Lord's service. And then those desires are burnt up by being engaged in the Lord's service. Yeah. Then, that is there, but if someone, even he won't do that, then like Krishna is saying, if he can't do that, then at least be nice, be pious. You know, he's basically saying, best is to be a pure unalloyed devotee. If you can't do that, then follow sadhana bhakti. If you can't do that, then follow the Vedic culture. If you can't do that, follow the Vedic culture for Krishna, daiva varnashram. If you can't do that, then at least follow ordinary varnashram as a karmi. If you can't do that, then it's okay to be a jnani. You know? But better than a jnani is a yogi, and better than a yogi is a devotee. So he just takes it through. So it's allowed for the others because at least there's a chance if they come in contact by following the Vedic culture, there's so many opportunities to come in contact with bona fide devotees, bona fide Brahmins. And then one gets the opportunity, one may hear about devotional service. Then the only thing one has to change is one's goal and the emphasis in the process. Means for us the aspects that of karma that give result for us aren't part of our process. They're just part of duties that are, I mean, how you say, they're not main process. For us chanting the holy name, then that's supported by the deity worship and all the rules and regulations there. And then that is then supported by the just social culture of interaction with people. We follow the Vedic rules. That automatically gives artha. You follow Dharma, you'll get artha. But we're not doing it for ourselves, we're doing it for Krishna. So like that, then that emphasis is there. For the Karmi, that is the Dharma artha, that is his main process. And that's what he wants. He wants Dharma artha kama, and that's all. And then for the Jnani, he'll go for the Dharma artha and kama, because he knows if he's done that, then he can go for moksha. You know, he's gotten married, he's had his children, he's studied the Veda, he's done all his things, now he's going to go on for Brahman realization. But so then he emphasizes the more subtle portions. But then the devotee emphasizes the transcendental portions. Does that make sense? So it's like one book works for everybody. Like that. But at the same time, it's still hidden. Because unless one hears it from a devotee, one actually doesn't know what's going on. One gets bewildered by karma and jnana. That's the thing. For that twice-born man by whom not the slightest danger even is caused to created beings, there will be no danger from any quarter after he is freed from his body. It means if he hasn't created any problem for anybody, then there's nothing to, one does not have to take birth to get the reaction from that. If one has harmed somebody, then you have to take birth so they can harm you. So this is the aspect of the karma, it's just it's freed from there. And at the same time, as if one has preached and all this, then very nicely and tried to always help, means what is it? Jare Deko, Tari Kaha, Krishna Upadesh. Whoever one sees, whoever one meets, say something about Krishna, help them in some way, then there's no danger, meaning that he'll take birth or be materialistic. Even if one doesn't complete Krishna consciousness, there's no danger that one will go back into material life. One will be, how you say, in the family of devotees, and in this way one will be able to progress very nicely. 41. Departing from his house fully provided with the means of purification, pavitra, let him wander about absolutely silent and caring nothing for enjoyments that may be offered to him. The means of purification, fully provided with the means of purification, so that the body, the body, the mind, the words, and will be kept pure. They'll always be engaged in Lord's service here. Silence means that one is absolutely silent. So absolutely silent means it has to be on the transcendental platform. Because if one doesn't speak, that's not actually silence. Because one may not be speaking, but one's activities are also speech. So one then from that people will see piety. Right? If someone's very detached, renounced, austere, that's piety. It's not transcendence. It's piety. So how you say, by speaking about the Lord, that is absolute silence. Because then one hears about the Lord and then one sees that these activities of detachment and austerity, these are engaged in the Lord's service. So by doing that, then, how you say, yeah, that is actual absolute silence. Otherwise it's not. But if one's not a devotee, then for them, absolutely silent means they won't speak anything. And that's actually a blessing. Because if they're not a devotee, better they don't say anything. You know? They just wander in the forest and, you know, end their life in this way. Yeah, caring nothing for enjoyments that may be offered, that whatever is offered, they must be engaged in the Lord's service. Whatever is, if it's something that's offerable, then it must be engaged in the Lord's service. If it's not engaged in the Lord's service, then one can get, sidetracked by them. This Vishnu talks about in the Narta Nivriti, one can get sidetracked by Ranga, Taranga Rangini. That the waves in the ocean of devotional service, the waves in the top, these are the dharma, artha, karma, kama, moksha, all the facilities, all these different things that come. They're just side things, they're servants of bhakti. When one is engaged in devotional service, it's said that mukti and all the what do you call it? What's the name for it? For dharma, artha, kama, moksha? They have a name. There's a name for them as collectively as a group. Yeah, Purusharta. I don't remember. Like that. And then devotional service is considered the fifth, the topmost of that. So those all stand wanting that along with the mystic cities, all that, that's all. So those are all the waves of devotional service, because they're all there to serve anyone who's doing service. That's why the example is always given of the acharyas are like sharks in that ocean, because sharks don't, they always stay underneath the waves. They always dive deep and they move around fearlessly in this ocean. Like that. So one avoids that. So one has to be very careful, because in the performance, every activity gives a reaction like that. So if one is detached, renounced, these kind of, one is steady in devotional service, one is fixed like that, it gives a reaction. People appreciate that. They give facility. They give so many things. So now if one takes those for oneself, then one gets implicated. And then one will find that devotional life starts to go down. God. If speaking about dharma, then the bull shows up. Had many things come during the class, but never a bull. Yeah, better than a buffalo. Yeah. Oops. Let's figure out where the kitchen is. Okay. 42. Let him always wander alone, without any companion, in order to attain final liberation. Fully understanding that the solitary man who neither forsakes nor is forsaken gains his end. We see Madhavendra Puri, he also would travel alone. He wouldn't travel with anybody. Because then the worry was is that if he travels with somebody, they may talk prajalpa. So he would travel alone. But then also in here, is one is never alone, because one understands that the Lord is in the heart. So this means one gives up, how you say, any external companionship for always having the Lord's companionship, like this. But now, if that is service to Krishna, then this companionship is not a problem. That's not a problem. So therefore, you would see Lord Chaitanya, he would always be with devotees. When Madhavendra Puri was moving, devotional service was not strongly established, so he moved alone. Like this. But with Lord Chaitanya, then Sankirtan was established, and then one would move many together. You might check the kitchen.
There's a bull on the
other side. There's a bull. And who neither forsakes nor is forsaken. Also, who, in other words, there's always the problem that you don't live up to somebody's expectations. Like that. In a relationship, there's always that problem. Is that everyone expects something of you, or you expect from them, and then you don't get what you want, they don't get what you want, and that creates all kinds of anxiety. Like that. So then, generally, we see is then it's one should put oneself in a position where that is not experienced. It's very clear what is one's position. So what one can do for others, and then one also doesn't expect things from them. One is not dependent, in other words. One is not dependent upon others. Like that.
How do we avoid the tendency towards impersonalism?
Because one is Krishna conscious, so one is just giving others Krishna consciousness. And one is associating with them on that platform and hearing from them on that platform. So if that is there, then that association may be more. And if it's less, then one would also make that association less. So one means the devotional activities are all always there. But one has to see that... one's not expecting something beyond that. You know? In other words, one shouldn't put oneself... We discussed this some days back about dependence. It's mentioned that the dvija is always... is never dependent upon others. That for doing their particular activity. It means that the businessman, if he's dependent on someone else to do the business, then it becomes difficult. But as a citizen of the kingdom... he is dependent upon the king keeping a peaceful atmosphere in which he can do his business. So that is there. But ultimately, when he becomes more deep in his understanding, he's dependent upon Krishna. So then he's free there. So he's dependent upon Krishna, and he performs his duties, and then whatever comes belongs to Krishna. So one should not be dependent, because then... what one needs, others have, and that becomes very difficult. So one should establish the life so one is independent. It doesn't mean that one is not working with others. It just means that to make yourself Krishna conscious, then one is not dependent upon things outside the transcendental process. Right? Means in the beginning it may be if I'm in a certain, let's say, climate, then I can function better. Right? But then ultimately, to be Krishna conscious, it doesn't matter where you are. So one may have these dependencies in the beginning, but ultimately not. Like that, to be Krishna conscious. Because in the beginning, your particular service that one does with the body is what is going to make one Krishna conscious. But then later in life, then one can be Krishna conscious. Doesn't matter really what the body is doing. Does that make some sense? Then for the sake of doing that service, then one may take into consideration climactic conditions. So that a certain climate is better, you can then perform those duties. But if one doesn't have that opportunity, it doesn't mean one won't be Krishna conscious. Just one may not be so good at doing activities.
Yes. I don't think the bull feels me safe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they don't. Bulls don't take hints. They don't work on subtleties. Generally, large bamboo sticks. Then they understand what you're talking about. Otherwise, they don't. 43. He shall neither possess a fire nor a dwelling. He may go to a village for his food. He shall be indifferent to everything, firm of purpose, meditating and concentrating his mind on Brahman. So he doesn't possess a fire. The Brahman, then, the tradition is that as a brahmachari, then they are in the house of the teacher. So the fire that they're using there belongs to the teacher. It's the teacher's fire. Like that. And that fire then they are using for their worship. Because the fire in the house of a Brahman is always kept burning. Then when he gets married, then the fire from the marriage, generally that is what he keeps. And that's the fire that he will keep in his house and then do his daily yajnas. And then from that all the fire in the house comes out of that. Then, so at the end, when one takes sannyas, then one gives up that fire. Like that. Because the fire generally means this is the means of gaining one's fruit of benefits, like that. So for us, that is the material platform. But for us, it's the Samkirtan mission, the Samkirtan yajna. So that fire is always kept. So the idea of material, the fire for material benefit, or that is given up. That fire of that one enhances one's material facilities, that is given up. And one only keeps the fire of the preaching mission, like that. So that is, he gives up possessing a fire, nor a dwelling. He doesn't say this is his dwelling. It means he may be generally in here we're talking about a sannyasu who will wander in the forest, like that. And they may come into the village if they need something to eat, or they may not. They're under no obligation. It means this here is being discussed as, means the form will be that which a karmayogini can relate to, which will be someone who will just go out, and when they take sannyasi, you never see him hardly anything. So now, in the Kali Yuga, where you have missions, then many times there'll be a seat, you know, a place where they sit, like Madhva sits in Udupi. He has his seat. But it's not, as such, his seat, because it's the seat of the place of learning. So after he goes, someone else will be in that seat. It'll be his, how you say, it is a place for transcendental activities. It's not, as such, one's for specifically for the benefit of the body. This means the dwelling is not for one's personal benefit, but is a facility for performing service, like that. So you'll only find that in the Kali Yuga. So the Manusamhita applies to all the yugas. But in the, at least where Varnashram is being, in the Satya Yuga, generally they're all Paramahamsas, say all Hamsas. So most of the book they don't have to deal with at all. But from Treta Yuga, then all that has to be dealt with. In the Treta Yuga, then this book applies. So generally in the other yugas, they would just wander. You know, as we see, Narad Muni in his previous life as a maidservant's son, then he was just wandering. After his mother died, he just wandered, like that. Sukadev Goswami, when he left his house, he just went off wandering. You know, he just ran away, moved in the forest, didn't care. But in the Kali Yuga, then you always have missions. So you have the missions of the four sampradayas, and you have Shankaras like this. So then in that way, then they may have places that they preach out of or work out of, like that. But otherwise, it's understood it's not theirs, like that. It's not theirs.
Maharaj, what does Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati mean when he says seven tongue fire of the Sankhya?
Because the Agni, he has seven tongues. That's why when you see the fire, the flame is his tongue. That's why you always see there's so many tips to it. Because there's so many tongues. He has so many tongues. So when you offer oblations, you offer it into the tongue. Like that. So here, for us, offering into the tongue, the seven tongues of the Samkirtan Agni, then is that first verse of the Shikshastakam. That has seven parts. Chetodarpanam Arjanam, Bhava Mahadav Agni Nirvapanam, the third, Shreya Kairavi Chandakave Taranam, fourth, Vidyavadhu Jivanam, fifth, Anandam Buddhi Bardhanam, sixth, Patipadam Purnam Ritas Swadhanam, and then seventh is Sarvatma Snapanam, that complete full surrender, like that. So that is the seven aspects or tongues of the Samkirtan mission, like that. So that's what's, so for us, that fire is kept, and then the other fires then are. What is a patch? A potsherd. I wonder what that is. Instead of an alms bowl. I don't know. The roots of trees for a dwelling, coarse worn out garments, life in solitude and indifference towards everything are the marks of one who has attained liberation. potsherd. Do you know what a potsherd is? No, anyone know what a potsherd is? Potsherd. That's what it's, I mean, that's how it's spelled. It says instead of an alms bowl. I don't know what that means. Doesn't say. In other words, one is staying anywhere, one has old, worn-out garments. Life in solitude means that one is always just, one is not looking for social kind of activities, but one is always interested in devotional study, devotional association. So one can be in association, that's samkirtan. One is in so much association, but it's for the purpose of developing one's Krishna consciousness. It's not for just spending time. There's some purpose. Indifference towards everything that one is indifference means normally we're attracted or repulsed. So indifference means we're neither of those. Something is not overly wonderful or so, just like you go back, what was it, like in the 80s? You know, 70s, early 80s, and you know, a Rolex watch, that was like, you know, considered very, very proper, you know, so all your very senior, you know, devotees and leaders and Sankirtan and all that, and they all, that was a sign of, you know, that one has, was very pukka. So, that it's considered very valuable, like that, but one has to be indifferent. One isn't attracted by those things. One is not repulsed. You know, it means that one is not worried about what do you call it? If one needs a watch, one uses it. If one doesn't need, he doesn't use. He's not specifically attracted by it. He has to have and like that. So the indifference, just whatever is useful in the service, that is what one uses, and what is not kept. One doesn't unnecessarily keep, just because it glitters. 45. Let him not desire to die. Let him not desire to live. Let him wait for his appointed time as a servant awaits for the payment of his wages. Because desiring to die means it's difficult here. You want to get out of it. So you want to. But the point is whatever problems are there in the material world, we've created ourselves. It's our own, how you say, we've put ourselves in the situation. Because we may say, well, I didn't, you know, how you say, plan this. But then why is it we're experiencing? Because so many other people are not experiencing. You know, out of 5 billion people on the planet, how many are experiencing what we're experiencing? Basically, only us. That's always the thing. We're always thinking you want to share whatever one's happinesses or distress are with others. Because only we know what they are. Others don't. We're actually, if you look at it, factually, the sannyas understanding means understanding our actual position in the world. Because we're actually all alone in the world. We only know what we experience. We only are in the situation that we're in. No one else is in it. So therefore, it does at the end come down as just us and the Lord. And how much faith we have in the Lord, how much faith we have in the devotional process. And that's what we have. Then on that platform, then we can actually take advantage of and appreciate devotees, because they're unique persons who are serving the Lord. They have a unique identity. So then we appreciate and take advantage of their realizations like that. We share our realizations or we have questions, and then we take advantage of their realizations like that. So it's the natural position of the living entity. So therefore, the devotee, if he's very well situated in devotional service, it doesn't really matter what varnashram one's in when it's actually on the platform of sannyas. Though it may not be manifest. So here it's pointing out is the manifestation of that is that one sleeps under trees, one wears coarse, worn-out cloth, one stays alone, one's indifferent towards everything. like that. Then one can say, oh, this person is in sannyasa ashram, like that. But otherwise, this attitude is there for all devotees. That's their position. It's just a matter of the whole process of sadhana bhakti and practicing the Vedic culture, then helps us engage our conditioned nature in the process of chanting Hare Krishna. And then from chanting, then we will purify all these till we come to that natural understanding. Like that. So whatever the position. So he's not desiring to die, because this, you know, it's like whatever comes, he doesn't see it as necessarily as bad anyway. And like Queen Kunti, she's not seeing that all those 14 years in the forest were bad. She's seeing now it's bad, now we're emperors of the world sitting in our palace, and because of this, then we're just engaged in our duties, Krishna's not here. Well, when we're in the forest, we're always thinking of Krishna, Krishna's always with us. So actually that time was better. Like that. So therefore, the doesn't have the desire to die, because that, or the desire to live. It's just whatever the Lord wants. Whatever comes, you know, due to our previous activities, means our life today, the moment we're at today, is a culmination of unlimited lifetimes in the past. This is the point that we're at now. So now it's just whatever we've done before, okay, let us suffer the reaction to that, whatever it may be, good, bad, or otherwise. And whatever comes, we'll engage that in the Lord's service. It's like whatever I've done for unlimited lives, that has created the consciousness that I had that created this body. Right? Thank you. And here, as a servant waits for the payment of his wages. It means he's done his work, if he's done it properly, and who he works for is satisfied, then he naturally is paid. That would be the system. So then here, as one performs one's activities, and then one just waits for the Lord. When the Lord wants one to go, one goes. When he doesn't, he doesn't. Like we see with Srila Prabhupada. He was not desirous to leave, he was not desirous to stay. It was all up to Krishna. You know? It was all up to Krishna. Like that. Devotees wanted him to stay, so then, you know, then he says, well, you speak to Krishna. You ask him. You know, you pray to him. If he makes the arrangement, we stay. If he doesn't, we go. So like that. And this is a very perfect example of this. Let him put down his foot purified by his sight. Let him drink water purified by straining with the cloth. Let him utter speech purified by truth. Let him keep his heart pure. When one is walking, one should look like 12 feet in advance. And then it's considered that the ground in front of one becomes purified. So then one is always stepping in a pure place. So that means, of course, one is, by looking that much ahead, you know what's coming. And one is able to step also in proper places. So the glance has seen it, and then one's going to put one's foot in the proper place. So that is that ground has been purified. And the same like when you do achman, you put the water in the palm, before you sip it, you see it. So it's purified by sight, by seeing it. Just like when you eat, you have to see it. Like that. If you eat when it's dark and you can't see what you eat, it's not purified. It means it may be prasad, we're purified by that, but the physical benefit of it, that others take.
Purified by sight because the eye has the door of the soul?
I'm not so sure like that. Sir. I think it's I don't know, maybe on a higher platform. But I've always understood on the lower platforms, it's all part of the process of digestion. Is that you see what's made, what's there, and it's done in a proper fashion, you know, pure, and it looks fine and attractive. So then the interest to eat and the digestion, everything starts. If you see something you don't like, then nothing starts, you know. So then that seeing is part of the thing. Then also, I'm not sure, eyes work by fire, like that. Bile controls the eyesight. So if the liver's bad, the eyesight also goes, like that. So you generally see they all go together. You know, bad digestion, difficulty, you know, with the joints, like that, bad eyesight. They all, movement becomes difficult, all these things, because it's all dealing with fire. In other words, the whole idea is that the life is pure. Life is kept pure, like that. You hear some other comments mentioned. He should also, by looking, then he won't step on any animals or any bugs like that. So then he doesn't give disturbance to other living entities. And, yeah, let him drink water purified by straining it. Means you're not going to get other animals in it. Plus it'll be pure. It'll be proper for the health, proper for, he can use it in worship and that. Speech is purified, that we understand by Krishna consciousness. And let him keep his heart pure, means the desires. One should not develop material desires. One should be very careful about that. 47, let him patiently bear hard words. Let him not insult anybody. And let him not become anybody's enemy for the sake of this perishable body. Means for any activity that you do for the body, one should not become someone's enemy. It's like someone will do something to get what they want, they become someone's enemy, or like that. But for that, they won't do. They may speak the truth, maybe some don't appreciate that. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would speak very strongly, and then he would, you know, gain ill will from the caste Goswamis and persons like this. But one should not for the body become. In other words, and no one is one's enemy. Like that. They may feel we may be their enemy, but one doesn't feel that someone else is their enemy. That's also very important. Like Yudhishthira, who is known as Ajashatru, means for him no enemy was born. To him he saw no one as his enemy. Though plenty of people saw him as their enemy. But it wasn't due to his activities. You know? Like that. He just followed truth. And in following truth, there's people who don't appreciate truth, and then one may become their enemy. Like that. From that, but he doesn't see anyone else. So Duryodhana wasn't his enemy, but he was Duryodhana's enemy. Like that. Against an angry man, let him not in return show anger. Let him bless when he is cursed. Let him not utter speech devoid of truth, scattered at the seven gates. Oh, I see. The five senses, the mind, and the ahankara. Or others give the idea of seven worlds, you know, something that's for the benefit of the, how you say, for attaining to the seven worlds, means in the material world. Yeah, means, in other words, worldly matters. Yeah, so this is that principle of amanina mana dana, Trinadapi sunichina, tarodapi sahishnana. One is tolerant, one is patient, one offers respects to others, one does not expect respect. So one should, we can see for here, it's natural basic foundation of all these is one is situated, you know, ideally in nishta bhakti. Because these are all the things of, these are all definitions of that. You know, or for ourselves, we know then by the devotional process, then these things also, I mean, by the devotional process, we get situated in those, and the farther one is in that, then the more it develops. But a comfortable minimum is nishta. Because if ruchi is there, then the subtleties go away. It means in nishta, the gross attractions are basically gone. But the subtle still may be there. But then in ruchi, then the subtle go away. Then one only has to worry about that one becomes proud that one is an advanced devotee. And one has to worry about that. Therefore, one's always offers respect to others and not expects for himself. Then that hurdle can be crossed. Forty-nine. Delighting in what refers to the soul, sitting in the postures described by the yoga, independent of external help, entirely abstaining from sensual enjoyments, within himself for his only companion. He shall live in this world, desiring the bliss of final liberation. So in other words, always taking satisfaction in you know, the Lord, his name, form, qualities, pastimes, then always, you know, sitting properly, and not dependent upon anything external, and not dependent upon anything external, and not trying to enjoy anything external, and then only, how you say, his real companion is the Lord and the Lord's devotees, the sincere devotees. Then that's how one shall live in the world. Yeah. And then desiring to be fit for service, you know, the transcendental service of the Lord. What time is it now? 5:06.
About
20:06. Okay. Oh, this is interesting. 50. Neither by explaining prodigies and omens, nor by skill in astrology and palmistry, nor by giving advice, and by the exposition of the shastras, let him ever seek to obtain alms. In other words, one may be very expert in all these fields, and these are the fields that people will come to one for, but this is not how one should not do these things to get donations, to get food, to get something from people. It means if they come and ask, one may speak on these things if the person is qualified to hear. But one will not do it as a way to generate funds as a livelihood. One just accepts whatever comes along. Let him not, in order to beg, go near a house filled with hermits, brahmanas, birds, dogs, or other mendicants. Like this. It means, just because he sees others there, he shouldn't then be going, because one is the person may have already given, and then someone else shows up, it becomes very, very difficult. So then one shouldn't just see, oh, here's an opportunity for me, because then this gives there's the sense of the fruitive desire is there, that one, the how you say that was one of the aspects of Raghunath Das when he was begging at the gate. Then he'd see the same person and thought, well, they gave yesterday, maybe they'll give today, and so it creates a bad feeling. like that. Like Raghunath Das felt it was like the mood of a prostitute. You know, it was like it wasn't the, you say, it becomes very kind of business-like and all that. So therefore, when you have a house that we see there's many hermits, Brahmins, or other mendicants there, then the idea that would come to mind, this is for the idea of begging. One may go there because here it looks like good association, you can discuss shastra, you want to get some association like this, that's fine. But for the idea of, well, they're there, so they're there, must be something's happening, or maybe, you know, they're being fed, or there's a whole big... So it creates an undue... Yeah, expectations like that. The expectations that you think something's going to happen, and in other words, the mode of passion comes up, and the kind of the desire comes, and then filled full of birds and dogs. Then, you know, dogs are not necessarily friendly with people who come by. So if it's filled with them, then there's something wrong there, because generally, a house is not filled with dogs, you know. There may be one dog that wanders around. It just happened to be in the neighborhood and took a liking to that particular place, so it stayed there. So if you find a place where there's lots of dogs, then you generally have somebody there who is very, very worried about their security. You know, will be generally very miserly, or just it's a bad place. You know, just the dogs all hang out, it's a deserted place, or it's these are chandalas, so they keep dogs. I mean, it's just many dogs in one place is not considered good, like that. Birds, I'm not sure why, if there's too many birds. Maybe because, I'm not sure. Maybe because birds get distracted very easily. On the bird's part, then they're very sensitive to people, like that. Many times, much more than other animals. They're very sensitive because everything moves on air, so everything in them moves very fast. Their mind moves fast. Everything moves fast.
Why does birds live in the grains?
There would be grains.
Because they eat them.
Oh, that could be. Yeah. I'm not sure why birds. Okay, 52. His hair, nails, and beard being clipped, carrying an alms bowl, a staff, and a water pot, let him continually wander about, controlling himself and not hurting any creature. 53. His vessels shall not be made of metal. They shall be free from fractures. It is ordained that they shall be cleansed with water, like the cups called kshama at a sacrifice. A gourd, a wooden bowl, an earthen dish, or one made of split cane. Manu, the son of Swayambhu, has declared to be vessels suitable for an ascetic. Here it refers to Manu as the son of Swayambhu. Let him go to beg once a day, let him not be eager to obtain a large quantity of alms. For an ascetic who eagerly seeks alms attaches himself also to sensual enjoyments. When no smoke ascends from the kitchen, when the pestle lies motionless, when the embers have been extinguished, when the people have finished their meal, when the remnants in the dishes have been removed, let the ascetic always go to beg. So this means is let him go after the people have already made their endeavor for their food. They've eaten everything's whatever's left. Let him go at that time, what's left over, because then there's no anxiety for them giving the alms. The brahmacharis generally will go out earlier than that. They'll generally go before that, because whatever they're getting many times for the sacrifice, this and that. So they'll get uncooked grains or different things like this. So, or they'll get stuff that's been freshly made. So they're generally going out begging before noon. But here we can see it's recommended the sannyasi go much later in the day, generally in the third prahara. That means that that's the time they've, you know, lunch is finished, whatever's left over, because then people will happily give that. There'll be there's no anxiety for anyone. Well, if one goes before that, then there may be create the anxiety that they weren't expecting or this or that or don't have and they can't give. But if they go after, then two things are there. If they have, they're happy to give it away. And if they don't have, they can say, oh, sorry, everything finished. So in either case, it's not an embarrassment for the person one begs from, because that was a point before. One should not embarrass people. Fifty-seven. Let him not be sorry when he obtains nothing, nor rejoice when he obtains something. Let him accept so much only as will sustain his life. Let him not care about the quality of his utensils. Let him disdain all food obtained in consequence of humble salutations. For even an ascetic who has attained final liberation is bound with the fetters of the samskara by accepting food given in consequence of humble salutations. He's going and saying all kinds of nice words to someone else and praising them, and then because of that getting results like that, then one should avoid that. You know, because then it's kind of more like it gives also that flavor of business and like that. Yeah, it says here even someone who has come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, then he becomes bound up by the consciousness and that of the people who give him the things. Like that. So that should be avoided. 59. By eating little and by standing and sitting in solitude, let him restrain his senses if they are attracted by sensual objects. By the restraint of his senses, by the destruction of love and hatred, and by the abstention from injuring the creatures, he becomes fit for immortality. Any questions on anything else? No? What time is it now? Much more is here on the ascetic. There goes something more. Yeah. So in other words, we see that one is trying to develop that one is not attracted by anything, one is not attached, one does not hate. Because that's the whole material, that's Krishna's mood when he comes. He's not attached to the material world, he doesn't hate it. He just comes here and performs his duties. It means he has no duties, but he performs duties just to set example. So that's Krishna's mood when he comes to the material world. So then the idea is those who can move with him and stay with him eternally, they should also be in that same, they should also be not attracted by the material world and not hate the material world. So that's the whole idea is the life of the ascetic is for developing that mentality. questions on this? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktabrinda ki, Jainitai Gaura Premanandi.